stars in many people's opinion, Anarchy in the Arena match in the main event at Double or Nothing this year. And I think the rivalry goes back a long way through many iterations, many combinations, certainly not involving Kota Ibushi to this point. And I think his arrival comes at a perfect time for AEW when we have so many interesting things going on in the company right now. I'm very grateful to Kenny Omega for many things, including bringing Kota Ibushi to the table to make this a possibility with Kota Ibushi debuting tomorrow night on Wednesday Night Dynamite in AEW Blood and Guts. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. I've got a write-in question here, Tony, from Dave Meltzer at the Wrestling Observer. We're going to follow this question with Bill Pritchard at WrestleZone. So Dave asks the following: what are your thoughts after 4 years now as the optimum number of pay-per-view shows per year? And is there any accuracy to All In as being a pay-per-view this year?
I will talk more about the availability of all. So we start with that, and then we'll go back. Jim, you can ask me the first part again. I will confirm in due time and soon the details about AEW All In. It will take place on Sunday, August 27th. It will be everyone will be able to watch it live. It will be taking place in the evening UK time, which means in the afternoon on the East Coast, and in that late morning slot on the West Coast. I know it's a viable slot for exciting live sports programming because it will be a very similar slot to where the NFL would run. Obviously, this will be a couple weeks before NFL football kicks off by design, honestly. And it is a great bank holiday weekend in the UK, so it'll be a great spot in prime time in the UK. And here in the US, it'll be airing in kind of that 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific Sunday NFL window, which I think is a great spot. And as far as the availability of it, we'll talk more about that with our partners, but we've got a great relationship with Warner Brothers Discovery, and typically our pay-per-view events have run through Bleacher Report. And as for the international carriers on this and the availability of certain replays and things like that, there'll be more to come. But I do see this as one of our biggest events, commensurate with our biggest pay-per-views, and we'll tell you more about it very soon.
Okay, Tony, Dave's other question was, what are your thoughts after 4 years now of doing this as to the optimum number of pay-per-view shows per year?
Well, I think it's evolving. It's a great question. I don't know if Dave's on the line to get into a discussion about it, but Dave is generally and been one of the leading experts on wrestling business economics and has written an extensive amount on the history of pro wrestling and the revenues and business cycles and things people have learned. I believe no wrestling company that has ever expanded its pay-per-view calendar due to demand and economics has ever regretted that decision. I think in general, there have been factors that have helped pro wrestling companies rise and fall over the years, but I do think that expanding your pay-per-view calendar has often been something that has been seen as revenue positive and been overall positive for companies. And certainly when there was competition in pro wrestling in the past, more pay-per-views was the standard. I think for us, we've launched with, to me, a very methodical plan. We've built a really solid calendar of major events. And to date, our big pay-per-view events are Revolution, Double or Nothing, Forbidden Door in partnership with New Japan Pro Wrestling, which has been a great success and the biggest debut of any of our events. And now we've got, of course, All Out and Full Gear. Now All In comes into the discussion as well. So now we're talking about six major events. And again, we'll talk more about All In, but six events that are certainly at least pay-per-view worthy events at a minimum. And as for expanding the calendar even further, it's something we've talked to Warner Brothers Discovery about, and it is something everybody believes could potentially be revenue positive. So I think that's something to certainly consider, but I'm very happy with what we built. And I think, you know, when people look back through wrestling history, it had been a long time since anybody had had the kind of success as a challenger brand we've had, really since the 1990s, that anybody has had the kind of numbers we've put up on pay-per-view as a challenger. So it's something that I'm thinking, obviously you could probably tell from the length of this answer and some of the things I'm saying, it's something I'm giving a lot of consideration to.
All right. Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Dave, for the question. Bill Pritchard from WrestleZone, you are next. And I'm going to follow Bill with a write-in from Kimmy Sokol from The Pop Break. Bill.
Okay, there I'm unmuted. Tony, how are you?
Hey, I'm very well, Bill. How are you?
Good. So I wanted to ask about the Death Before Dishonor main event. I know the injury to Mark Briscoe is unfortunate, but that leaves Claudio without a challenger, and there's a lot of speculation that perhaps the Blood and Guts match will play into that. Maybe one of the participants in that match will be Claudio's opponent. Can you talk about the accuracy of that, or maybe just what the plans are as far as announcing that match or
the world title match for Death Before Dishonor? Yes. Well, it's been a challenging process. I really appreciate you asking me and giving me the forum to talk a little bit about it. I'm very excited about the Death Before Dishonor pay-per-view, and the card I have slotted right now is very strong. We've announced a few matches and more in recent days because of injuries leading into the event. I've had to make changes upon changes, and it really started when I did something I felt very strongly about. It wasn't my first choice, but it was the right thing to do. And that was when I let Eddie Kingston go over and participate in the G1. And I sat with Eddie and Rocky in my office in Orlando. And to pull back the curtain a little bit, you know, there's people you have relationships in this business with, and then there's people you have really, really strong relationships in this business with. And Eddie is one of the latter for me. And he's more than somebody I just work with in wrestling. He's a good friend, and I really care about him and his well-being. And it's one of those things that I know very well, and I feel like wrestling fans know. And everyone feels like, even if you don't know Eddie personally, like you kind of know him. He's just a very relatable person, in my opinion. And it's part of why he's such a compelling wrestling personality. I really love Eddie. And he really wanted to go over and participate in the G1. So it involved a major pivot from some of the things we've been doing, because I think Eddie had been a major focus and a major direction. And certainly Eddie and Claudio, their rivalry and the hatred they have for each other is far from over. Claudio's been a dominant champion, but certainly I would love to see another match between Eddie and Claudio at some point. And now with Claudio, I was looking to get the best possible challenger for him. And given the situation, and I was hoping maybe even some possibility that Eddie could fly back to participate in Death Before Dishonor and then go back to Japan. And I certainly would have accommodated the travel if that was possible. It wasn't possible. And Mark Briscoe, I had slotted for something different in the card. Well, it turned out that was also not viable for another reason I'll get into in a moment, but there have been so many things that came up, and it can be like a domino effect, and it's very challenging. And I get why people would say just start announcing stuff, but there's a reason why you don't want to just start announcing stuff, especially when the dominoes start to fall like this and you start moving people from one match to another. So then with Mark Briscoe's injury, which is of course, you know, something you asked me about, it was very challenging because Mark had been dealing with injuries for a while, and I think some of us almost took it for granted because Mark is such a fighter and he's such an amazing person with an amazing spirit. And I think Mark is another person who so many people really feel like they can relate to, and people really sympathize with Mark Briscoe, I think for many reasons, but also I think he's just such a compelling wrestling character and always has been. And it's why I've wanted to work with him for a long time and why I enjoy working with him now so much. So I felt like Mark could be an emotional hook for this pay-per-view in a lot of ways. And it was a pivot. So with Eddie going to Japan, I thought it would be very cool with Eddie having this big moment, winning the Strong Championship. If Eddie, from his big moment, passed on some wisdom to Mark Briscoe, and Eddie, if he were to say, as he essentially did, this is a big moment for him now, he's a champion, and he's got to speak to somebody he cares about, which is true. Eddie really does care about Mark. I've seen it firsthand, and he's been there for him, and he's part of that crew of people that would do anything for Mark, like so many of us. And I really, really wanted this to be such a great moment for Mark. And then I thought, with Eddie going to Japan, there's a chance to make it an even better moment, Death Before Dishonor, for Mark. And I knew he was dealing with some injuries, but honestly, he'd been dealing with them for a long time. But I think the pain had become too much to manage. And I think it was, getting very challenging for him. And to be honest, he hadn't really told a lot of people that, including our doctors. And, but the people who knew him really well knew he was hurting. I think Mark was no selling it. And I know he was no selling the doctors a little bit on how much pain he was in. And that's why they were a little surprised by how much this had become a lifestyle challenge to him, that like he was really beat up and it was starting to affect his life. So when he came to me and said, look, it's worse than I've been letting on, and I'm not sure I can do this. Well, that meant changing everything. And we had shot a lot of stuff when we went to Mark. We had shot weeks of promos. Claudio went on a training sabbatical for Blood and Guts. He'd been in Switzerland. So we had shot weeks of promos and put all the pay-per-view materials together with Mark. But if Mark Briscoe comes to me and says he needs something, I'm going to do it no matter what it is. And if he needs time to heal up and needs me to pivot the pay-per-view, I'm going to do that for him without question. I do that for pretty much anybody, but I'll do it with a smile for Mark Briscoe. And so that meant changing pretty much everything again. And I would have had Willow Athena announced a week sooner, but that involved pushing Willow's match in the Owen back. And there was a chance Willow wasn't going to compete in the Owen at all in the semifinals and finals, let alone win the entire tournament. So then from a medical perspective, you're looking at that and saying there's no certainty as to how Willow's going to feel next week, but I'm going to postpone her match and postpone this Death Before Dishonor announcement. Shibata, I'd always had scheduled to come over this past week because he wasn't supposed to be the first match we announced. But I did think it was really important to do a press conference and get him and Garcia face to face, given the last two times they were in the ring, what happened at Forbidden Door and that TV match where Garcia got the pin on Shibata, which I haven't talked much about on this call, but I would like to at some point. And that was a really great tag team match, I thought, with Garcia getting the win. And I really loved the four-way match they participated in for the international title at Forbidden Door. And so that got announced this week. There's been other changes to the card, including some stuff involving the television title you wouldn't even believe. Some of the circumstances, it's just been some crazy stuff. We're very fortunate to have a great TV title match on the card. Samoa Joe versus the winner of The Eliminator, Dalton Castle and Shane Taylor, wrestling on Thursday night. We're very fortunate to have such a great TV champion at all with Samoa Joe, the king of television. He's so great. And very grateful he'll be participating on the pay-per-view now. There's been so many changes and things that have come up along the way. It's been probably, along with last year's Forbidden Door, the most challenges I've had going into the build of the pay-per-view. And many of you would remember all the things that happened, because Forbidden Door was another event where you had like a wave of injuries and I had to make a bunch of changes, and then another wave of injuries and you had to make another wave of changes. So it was almost like a pivot on top of a pivot. And I think that's what we had to do here. But what I hope and believe is we'll have an amazing show. That Forbidden Door last year turned out to be in the opinion of many people, one of the greatest pay-per-view events of all time, and was voted by the readers of multiple publications last year to be the best wrestling event of 2022, despite all the challenges we had in the build leading up to it. So I'm really hopeful that it's going to be a great match. Now, my long-winded answer to your question leading back to Claudio, will address Claudio's opponent and who the champion will face for the world title this week. But as I referenced in there, Claudio had shot a lot of stuff for the Mark Briscoe match, and he has a huge week with a world title defense 2 days after one of the most barbaric toll-taking matches in all of pro wrestling, the Blood and Guts match on Wednesday night, in which he's a major participant. So he had planned a training sabbatical in Switzerland, and he's back now, and I think this week we'll address his Death Before Dishonor opponent, which will be a great match. And, of course, he's got the huge Blood and Guts match on Dynamite coming up. So I know that was a lot, but it's been a lot leading into this pay-per-view. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Tony, I've got a write-in here from Kimmy Sokol. She's with the Pop Break. And after Kimmy, by the way, Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics will be next. Kimmy's question is, how did you determine the tag teams for the Fatal 4-Way tag title match for Death Before Dishonor?
Well, I don't want to, I try to avoid, I think the Fatal is a WWE term, but it's a 4-way match. Yes, the four teams, that's another great one. It's so funny that's the question, Jim, because that was like, as I was finishing up that last answer, there was one thing I thought, I wish I'd referenced in there, and I didn't. And then you just teed me up with a great question to answer it. So thank you both for that. The 4-way match is another thing. As we've been doing the shows, there have been some challenges along the way. I think the Kingdom have been an amazing team in the tag team division. I thought they would be great to participate, and they picked up some big wins on Ring of Honor TV recently. Best Friends have participated on a number of Ring of Honor shows before I owned the company, and a number of the TV shows in recent months, and have done very well. They're one of the top tag teams in the world, and they've had a great rivalry with the Lucha Brothers. And the Lucha Brothers, of course, are great champions. I think it's tremendous for us to have such big stars as champions. Going back to some of the things I've mentioned, there have been a couple of things where we weren't able to get both Lucha Brothers at times on certain tapings, which is why you've seen them wrestling at times as singles. Some of that was due to some of the challenges of taping the Ring of Honor on Saturdays, when there's a lot of Lucha Libre shows that they had committed months in advance to. Now, some of those commitments are changing, and the Lucha Brothers are two of the greatest stars in all the world and great tag team champions of any company, and, of course, great representatives for Ring of Honor and Aussie Open. So with all the stuff with injuries, I mentioned some stuff with people where I was held up from making a match, maybe, but then it turned out great. And now it's worked out for the best with Willow coming back from the injury and winning the Owen Hart Cup, and now challenging Athena for the world title in the rubber match. Of course, injuries are going to keep Mark Briscoe out of Death Before Dishonor. But one very cool thing that was not a certainty is Mark Davis healed up. And Kyle Fletcher had been wrestling some singles matches and teaming with other members of the United Empire in both AEW and Ring of Honor. And Kyle Fletcher was doing great, but Aussie Open is also one of the top tag teams in the world. And very happy for Mark Davis that he's come back from his injury. And Aussie Open, when we launched this new Ring of Honor TV, they were one of the featured teams. They had some great matches. I think one of the best matches we've had on the ROH TV has been Aussie Open versus Matt Sydal and Christopher Daniels, which the former world tag team champions of ROH, which was a great match. And I thought all four teams would be perfect for this 4-way match. And when we got the clearance that Mark was good to go and Aussie Open were cleared to participate, they had been one of the top teams on the ROH TV before the injury. So I thought they would make perfect sense. But again, that was a match I would have liked to have been able to announce sooner, but I think it made sense to wait until I was sure Mark Davis was going to be able to participate. So there have been a few things that have worked out for the better on the show, but overall with injuries and some of the circumstances and even, you know, a choice I made to let Eddie go to Japan. And I, it's one of those things where, you know, I feel like AEW, Ring of Honor and New Japan are so closely tied together in an ecosystem of wrestling where Eddie making that trip to Japan is going to be good for everyone, especially him, which is, to be honest, in that situation, what I care about the most, and that he's going to come back, I believe, stronger, pun intended, and in a better position than when he left. And, you know, we'll still have a great Death Before Dishonor, and Eddie will be back, Mark will be back, and in this case, Mark Davis is back. So that is kind of one of the reasons why that match came together as it has. I think all three of the teams that have been healthy are great teams to participate, and three of the top teams, and now Aussie Open is back too. So it should be a great match.
Thanks, Tony. Thank you, Kimmy, for that question. Brandon Thurston, WrestleNomics. Brandon, you're up next, and Brandon will be followed by Jim Varsalone at the Miami Herald.
Hi, Tony. Thanks again for your time today.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for talking to me today.
So the rating just came out for Collision and Battle of the Belts, and the ratings seem to have been pretty good for, you know, it's a 3-hour block of TV for the first time, I believe, in AEW history. It got me to thinking, would you be open to a third hour of Dynamite? I know you said in the past when Rampage was coming out that there was discussion about a third hour of Dynamite, but that you didn't want to do it. And I understand there's a stigma around a 3-hour wrestling show because of Raw, people thinking, you know, that's too long for a wrestling show. But in terms of thinking how to maximize the best ratings for AEW to the network, I would think a third hour of Dynamite would do a better rating state than Rampage is doing. So is that something that you would be open to in this next TV deal maybe?
Well, it's an interesting question. It's something I'd have to think about a lot. Well, you know, it's a great question. Looking at the ratings, I think we all got the same data today. You know, I'm to be honest, I'm the chart. You're somebody, Brandon. I was actually, as an expert on WrestleNomics, as you are, I was looking at the chart. I was a little confused when I got it back because I don't know if you may not have seen it yet, but in the top 10, they actually have Collision and Battle of the Belts both listed twice in the top 10, both shows in the top 5 and then again in the top 10. And I'm not sure if that's because of the power outage from the hailstorm that they got listed as separate shows, but normally the West Coast feeds are part of the national ratings. So I'm not sure what that's about. So that's one thing I'm looking at. But no matter what, the ratings were very strong and positive for the 3-hour block of television. And maybe even I'm trying to ascertain what those replay numbers mean, if they're part of the total number like they would normally be or what that means. But when I got the chart today, both shows finished in the top 5 and then again in the top 10. They're both listed twice. So I don't know what that means exactly. Normally we don't see it like that. But regardless of that, I think it was a very, very strong number. And I'm trying to figure out if it was even stronger than on the surface or why it's listed twice. For the 3-hour block, it's not, as you alluded to, it's not something we've ever done before. It was the first time we ever tried it. It did very well. It held up very well. And it's something wrestling companies are doing every week. I can't comment as to whether it's something we'd plan doing on a regular basis on the future, but I would certainly say I would expect, based on the success of that number, that Battle of the Belts in future quarters would make sense after Collision. So I think, you know, the first time we did 3 hours of live television, I know was considered a success by the network. So now the question is that something we would want to do going forward? And I'll have to talk to them about it, because obviously, as you know very well, Brandon, the numbers just came in here in the last few hours and we're still digging through them. So it's something to analyze and think about. But certainly as a 3-hour block of wrestling on Saturday night, it did very well. And I'm not sure what that would mean for future weekends or Wednesdays. But I do think on a weekly basis, we found a really good rhythm with 2 hours of Dynamite, 2 hours of Collision, and now 1 hour of Rampage 2. And, you know, how those hours are allocated, it's something to certainly think about. But I'm glad that it went well this weekend and gave people something to think about. So thanks.
Thank you, Brandon. Jim Varsalone from the Miami Herald is next, and I'm going to follow Jim with a write-in question from Ella J., a wrestling gal. Jim.
Thank you both. I'm curious, because obviously health and safety is a concern, and I know you mentioned it a little bit about, I guess, what was written out there about some of the rules that are now written for that. But I am curious, too, with TV and pay-per-view, still taking in mind that safety and health are the concern, but is there a little more leeway in what wrestlers' talent can do on a pay-per-view compared to a TV show? And thank you.
I do think that there are things you can do on a pay-per-view and on in a big match that can push the boundaries. And I'm one who likes to push the boundaries on many things. Safety is not the best thing to push the boundaries on, though. So I guess it depends. It really depends. It's a situational thing. And there's some people in a certain situation, to be honest, I would let do something that I probably wouldn't trust to other people. And, you know, if Kenny Omega wants to do something, I think that's a lot different than one of the kids who has come up through AEW Dark, or, you know, somebody in a dark match wanting to do something. That's 180 degrees different than, you know, somebody like Kenny Omega, who has done a lot of stuff that other people would consider that it looks very dangerous, but I don't think people really understand what he does or how he does it. So, you know, I do think that it depends on who it is and what it is. And, you know, I take almost everything in life on a case by case basis. I don't think a cookie cutter rule of thumb necessarily is good to apply to everybody, but I do think there's good standards that we can hold up as a general rule of thumb. And then whether it's a big show or a pay-per-view or a big episode of Dynamite or Collision, you know, then you can look at doing things a little differently. And certainly, in some cases, rules are made to be examined or changed. And in other cases, there's stuff that I just think is common sense. So it just really depends on who it is and what it is. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. Tony, I've got a question write in from Ella J. And Ella's question will be followed by live and in color, Phil Strum from the USA Today Network. Here's Ella's question. Is there interest in sanctioning a rematch for the New Japan Pro Wrestling Strong women's title between Julia and Willow Nightingale on AEW/Ring of Honor turf?
Yeah, I definitely am interested in that. Obviously, the last match they had was very hard-hitting. I do think it would be a great match, and I am interested in that. We'll see what happens with Willow Nightingale and Athena. Will Willow Nightingale hold both the Owen Hart 2023 tournament championship as well as the Ring of Honor Women's World Championship? And then would it make sense to challenge for the New Japan Strong Championship? That is certainly a very exciting series of events. That would be very interesting. I think we'll have to see what happens this Friday night on pay-per-view at Death Before Dishonor with Athena versus Willow and what kind of condition Willow's in, because the last time she wrestled Julia, she was injured. And, you know, she's got to get out of this match in one piece with Athena, who's one of the most dangerous wrestlers in the sport. So I think, you know, and I say that obviously the, you know, the persona of Athena, I think is knowing her, she's an incredible professional, but I do think you know, it's going to be a great hard-hitting world title match at Death Before Dishonor with Athena versus Willow, and we'll have to see where both women are at coming out of that. I think Julia would be a great, great wrestler to come into either Ring of Honor or AEW, and I do think Julia is the New Japan Strong Women's Champion. Is somebody that certainly would be interested in having wrestling with us here. Thank you.
Thank you, Ella. Phil Strum from the USA Today Network is next, and Phil will be followed by Kevin Kellum from Sportskeeda. Phil.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
I've been enjoying Ring of Honor. You have some talent who have been mostly exclusive to Ring of Honor, The Kingdom, The Righteous, Stu Grayson, Blake Christian, and others. Do you intend, as this evolves, to kind of keep it that way? And do you think that there's kind of an opportunity to develop talent and acts through Ring of Honor and even maybe some of your partnerships with some of the independent companies? Thanks.
It's a great question. I think there is benefit to having some people appearing regularly on Ring of Honor, but I'm also looking to cycle it and people doing really well in Ring of Honor. It may make sense for them to stay there and continue doing what they're doing and keeping that momentum that they have. But then if spots in AEW open up where we could use them, I think it's very exciting to have that kind of flow. And that's why I want to manage that ecosystem. And I work really closely, as I mentioned before, with New Japan. And I really believe what we've built now in the partnership is a system where with AEW and Ring of Honor, we host a lot of talent from New Japan. We've talked about how Willow has been the New Japan Strong Women's Champion. Now Willow's challenging for the Ring of Honor Women's World Championship. Shibata, I've talked a little bit about him on this call, but Shibata is such a huge part of Ring of Honor now as the pure champion, and he's been great. He's stepping into the ring with somebody who's got a massive week. We're going to see Daniel Garcia on the Blood and Guts Dynamite. He's got a huge match teaming with Sammy Guevara against MJF and Adam Cole. I think it's really interesting dynamics with both teams. And Daniel Garcia also has this incredible opportunity to regain the Ring of Honor Pure Championship. He holds a win over Shibata. I think this is a very compelling match. The press conference got very heated this past weekend. It's been great to have Shibata here in our locker room. And, you know, every match he has, I never want to take it for granted, given what he's been through and everything he's endured and undertaken to get to this point in his career. And it is a very important match, I believe, in Ring of Honor. It's an important match to me personally. And I think there is a special identity to this new Ring of Honor, but it also is part of, as I said, an ecosystem with AEW and New Japan where wrestlers can come in and out, flow, work with each other. There are some differences, you know, I've talked about a little bit before, but we're home to a lot of the wrestlers from New Japan. We're also home to a lot of stars from Lucha Libre. And at times those things don't necessarily work together. And so, it means being flexible and building the cards and sometimes having to make changes to accommodate your partners as best you can. And with Ring of Honor, I think several people have stepped up and mostly appeared on those shows. But, there's also good potential. Some of those people could appear in AEW and then also wrestle overseas. And I also think we've got the ability to cycle people from AEW and other international companies into Ring of Honor and give people different kinds of opportunities. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. Kevin Kellum from Sportskeeda is next, and we will wrap up today then with John Pollock, who will follow Kevin from Post Wrestling. Kevin?
Thank you for the time. Tony, obviously Blood and Guts, Death Before Dishonor, huge shows, and then they really set the path as we head towards London and Wembley with All In, followed by All Out. So much to look forward to, a very big period here. All In. This is the biggest event you guys have ever produced live as a company. Massive event. Going to be a lot of fans, a lot of expectations. And then you have All Out, which is the biggest annual event. Can we talk about how fans can expect more than they're expecting with these events? People are talking dream matches, all these different things. Obviously, you can't give anything away at this point, but what can you talk about the scale of this event leveling up to those big fan expectations?
Well, the event is certainly the biggest in AEW's history, and I think All In is already, based on every business metric available at this point, All In is already one of the biggest wrestling shows in the history of the world. It stands currently over a month away from the event without any of the matches yet announced, as we really, I think, should get through this week, get through Blood and Guts, and see where we stand as a company with so many huge matches ahead this week across Dynamite and, of course, going into Collision this week, and we'll have another exciting weekend planned. I think in the coming weeks, the All-In card is going to take shape. It's going to be very exciting. And I believe at this point, it's fair to say the interest in the card, based on the interest in AEW and our debut show in Europe, our debut show in the UK, and of course our first time in London, then it stands that currently the show is only alongside a few of the very highest grossing WrestleMania events all time, as one of the top few wrestling events in the history of the planet. And that is very, very awesome for AEW. I think it speaks so highly of the interest in AEW, particularly in the UK, where AEW has been the number one wrestling company on television for a long time. And for us to become, in many ways, now the industry leader in the UK, that is a huge step for us as a wrestling company, and we can continue to take those steps and plant our flag around the world. But this one is very special to me because London is a home to me, and it's really one of the most important cities to me in my life, and it's one of the most important cities, I think, to everyone in the world. And I am so proud that we're going to Wembley Stadium, where my family has a lot of history with the Jaguars and with Fulham Football Club. And I believe AEW All In is going to be our greatest event ever. And this summer is a really exciting time for us. There are a lot of cool things happening in AEW. It's been amazing. The launch of Collision has been excellent. I feel really good about Collision 5 weeks into the show and what we've done. And to have something new with AEW Collision, while there are a lot of exciting things happening across Dynamite and Rampage, just looking at this week with the Blood and Guts match and the Jungle Boy and Hook rivalry and the Blind Eliminator final with MJF and Adam Cole taking on Sammy Guevara and Danny Garcia, with the winners of that match, looking forward to a championship match on Collision next week. I think there's so much exciting stuff happening in AEW right now that it's perfect timing for us to undertake such a massive event, because we have some stories that are really cooking right now. And I think it's only going to continue to get bigger and better as the summer goes on. We're approaching 200 episodes of AEW Dynamite, which is a really important milestone for us. So in addition to launching Collision and having that going really well, we've got the 200th episode of Dynamite coming up in a few weeks. I believe Blood and Guts this week will be episode 198. So a lot of really exciting things are happening, and I think it's a perfect flow. And I really do believe a lot of stuff is clicking now and will continue to click. And I think we're going to heat up and get really hot going into All In. So it's very exciting. And to be honest, this is the most excited I've been about wrestling in probably about 2 years. And I was the only one who knew what was happening 2 years ago. And it ended up being a really exciting period for the company. And I think there have been a lot of injuries and external challenges to help us get back to that kind of a point. And this event certainly is the biggest event in the history of our company and bigger than anything we've ever done before. And I think commensurate with that, a lot of the stories are starting to heat up and will continue to heat up in the weeks to come. And so that's something I'm really excited about. And, you know, that is an honest statement. This is the most excited I've been about wrestling and the stuff we have lined up and are about to do in 2 years. And 2 years ago, that was a really exciting period in wrestling. And I think we have the chance to do some exciting stuff here in the weeks and months to come. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. Let's squeeze in the last one, as we promised, John Pollock from Post Wrestling. John, you're going to bring it home.
Hey, Tony. We haven't heard from Brian Danielson since Forbidden Door, and that was about an hour after his arm injury. So I was just curious if there is any update. He had thrown out that night the timetable of 6 to 8 weeks, if that's still a shooting target or if it's a bit more serious than that. And as well, while injured, is he still contributing to the shows with consulting and throwing in other ideas?
It's been a little bit worse than I think anybody anticipated. I don't want to put an exact timeline on it, but Brian is in the process of recovering, and we can get into more details on it at a later date, but he's still engaged with me, and I talk to Brian on a very regular basis. He hasn't been traveling to the shows and coming to the meetings in person, but I still touch base with Brian all the time, and he's one of the people I'm closest to, I think, for many reasons, and he's one of the most intelligent people I know, so I always like talking to him about ideas and thoughts, and we really miss him. I think it'll be great when he comes back. Certainly, he would have been a tremendous participant in this Blood and Guts, but I do think there's so many exciting things happening right now, and it would be amazing if Brian was in the match, but I do think there's been this incredible silver lining, and it came in the form of the Hammer with Pac, and he is back, and it's great to have him back, and I think this was a great opportunity to bring Pac back not long after he had recovered from his injuries, and as soon as we possibly can, we'll get Brian back in, and even if it is a little bit longer than 6 to 8 weeks, he's rushing to get back as soon as he possibly can and pushing. And nobody works harder on their body and themselves than Brian does. So I have full confidence that Brian will bounce back from this as soon as he possibly can.
Thank you, John. And thank you, Tony. That is it. We're now at the end of our time. Tony, any closing thoughts?
I do have a couple, Jim. I really appreciate everybody being here. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today. Death Before Dishonor, it's available on cable, satellite, Bleacher Report. Also, this event will be available for the first time ever on watchroh.com, where people also watch the TV for the Honor Club. On watchroh.com, you can order the pay-per-view direct there for the first time ever. So that's something new, in addition to all the other great carriers, cable, satellite, and Bleacher Report have been great homes to the event, but now watchroh.com carrying the event, I think, is great. And this is a huge week for us. Just to reiterate, Blood and Guts is going to be an amazing event. Thank you to everybody who's going to be joining us either in Boston for Blood and Guts or for either of the shows in New Jersey this weekend. Big events with Death Before Dishonor and the Collision debut in Newark at a great venue at the Prudential Center. It'll be a great week, hopefully, for my family. Also, not a long trip from the Prudential Center down to Philadelphia for Fulham in our U.S. tour. Very excited about that. I just really grateful to everybody who joined us today. As I kind of elaborated on and gave a look behind the curtain to some of the challenges with injuries and things that led to this event, I do think when the card comes together as the week goes on, it will be a very strong pay-per-view card and one of the best Ring of Honor pay-per-view cards. And I'm just grateful to you all for giving me a chance to talk about it. And thanks for writing about it. thank you, Jim, for hosting this.
Absolutely.
And hopefully see you all this weekend, and just really, really appreciate you all. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tony. That was very nice of you. And we are at the end of our time, and we'll be distributing an audio recording to all attendees here shortly. But just to echo Tony again, we really do thank you for being part of today's call. As always, at All Elite Wrestling, we're super grateful for your excellent coverage and your commitment to professional wrestling. And we're looking forward to having you join us for Blood and Guts tomorrow night, or Ring of Honor on Friday night, or both. So with that, we ask you to have a great day, and we'll see you down the road. Cheers, all.